The information featured in this program is general in nature and therefore should not be relied upon. Guests appearing on the program may have commercial arrangements with some of the companies mentioned. Before making any investment, insurance or financial planning decisions, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you. Small Business Tuesday continues with Your Money, Your Call.
Hello and welcome to Your Money, Your Call. I'm Julia Lee from Bell Direct. And if you have a question about shares, our phone lines are open right now on 1300 30 34 35. Or you can always email us on yourmoney@skynews.com.au. And joining me on the panel tonight, we have Michael Wayne from COSEC and also Nick Raj from The Chartist. Well, you know, the market was up 10% over the past month, but it looks like lots of profit taking coming in today's session, with the market down by 1.4% and red across the board. And of course, this week we have the biggest macro risk to investments and the market, and that's the Federal Reserve meeting on Thursday. The market watching the dot plots to see whether or not the Federal Reserve is still planning to hike 4 times in 2016, and of course that commentary from Janet Yellen important as well. Well, let's talk to both our panelists on how they see this market and what they're doing. And Nick, we'll start off with you, just having a look at the technicals for this market.
Sure,
yeah. What are you seeing for the S&P ASX 200?
Well, it's come a long way, as you quite rightly said, in the last few months. But look, it needs a bit of a rest. There's very strong buyer demand. I mentioned last month and the prior month, very strong buyer demand we saw in the January and February lows. So we know the market is underpinned further down, and we've come a long way. So a nice little pause here. And as you quite rightly said, Julia, there's a few things on the horizon. Traders just lightening up their exposure at the moment. So it's okay. I'm not overly concerned. We might test down a little bit, but you know, I think we're going to continue to see choppy price action, and that's the way we're going to see 2016 roll out.
Okay, so pretty choppy and difficult for the market. I mean, looking at the market at the moment, Michael, and we're looking at the prospect of the US hiking rates in the first half of the year, possibly. And, you know, Australia's been sort of caught up in the emerging market reaction. So fears around what that interest rate hike might mean for growth. What are you telling clients at the moment?
Look, we've had quite a nice bounce back. I'm obviously led by the big miners and the big banks, but I think we're seeing a bit of consolidation around these levels. We've got a lot of sort of macro data coming to hand at the moment, a lot of central bank action as well. As you mentioned, we've got the Federal Reserve tomorrow night meeting. They're coming out with a new set of dot plots potentially. They're releasing a statement to the media as well. So it's quite a busy time. We had the central bank in Japan today. We've got the unemployment figures for Australia on later in the week. We've got two RBA board members as well giving speeches. So there's a lot to digest. We're still digesting the ECB stimulus last week. So it makes sense after a very strong rally that the markets sort of take a bit of a deep breath, consolidate around these levels, because we don't want to see a V-shaped recovery, really, do we? We want to see it consolidate and then grind higher.
Okay, so you're forecasting a higher 2016?
Look, it's difficult to say. Obviously, the miners and the banks play so much of a role in where the index does head. And if we look back over, say, 2015 and also 2014, if you took away the miners and the energy companies, the market was up over 10%. So it really does come down to how those miners and how those banks play out to determine where the index does finish for the year.
Okay, and Nick, I know that you're very big on momentum, and momentum's hardest to find in this market.
Sure.
So what are you doing with your portfolio?
Yeah, staying in cash. You know, we're happy to stay in a cash position. It's an easy thing to do. You know, we don't time the market. We just say, if the market's going up, we want to be involved. If the market's going down, we want to be defensive. If we can defend our portfolios when everyone else is losing, we're going to be better off in the longer term. And sometimes we have to sit in cash for a period of time. At the moment, personally, I've actually been increasing my holdings recently. I think I was 60% in cash recently. I'm now only 40%. But we've obviously seen a little bit of a bounce in the market. So if we turn and start going down again, I'll still keep going to cash. If we continue higher, then I'll keep investing. That's just the way we play it. In back on the Feds, you know, at the moment, I think 4 Fed rate hikes this year, I think that's a big call. It's possible. I'm not sure that it's probable. We haven't seen too much of a reaction from the futures in the overnight market. So it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight with Europe and obviously the rhetoric that that the Fed puts out in the next few days. So certainly interesting times. But, you know, we've come a long way, but these markets are underpinned by some good buyer demand at lower levels.
Okay, so that's from both our panellists, and we'll pick their brains later on in the show on what type of stocks they've been picking up with the downturn in the market. But let's go to our first caller, Brett from Sydney. Brett, welcome to the show. How can we help you out tonight?
Oh, hey, Julia, how are you? Mine's regarding Ausforex. It was trading around the 222.30 mark. Western Union made the takeover offer, got to 350. They pulled out of the takeover. Now it's $1.95. It's actually trading the lowest it's ever traded since it's listed. Its return on equity is 50%, 4% yield, good growth. Any reason why it's not a buy at these levels?
Sure. So having a look at Ausforex, I have to say I picked some Ausforex shares up after that Western Union bid fell over. And I guess one of the things with Ausforex is we did see, I guess, not only investors spooked by that deal ending, but also a lack of advertising during that period where they were negotiating with Western Union meant that, you know, they weren't growing as much as the market was expecting. We haven't seen a huge recovery in terms of the share price today. The share's down 1.5% at $1.92. I mean, just looking at some of the broker ratings, Deutsche Bank has a $2.60 target, $2.70 target. Macquarie's got a $2.60 target on the stock. And we'll start off with you, Michael. What do you think of
it? Yeah, look, it's a fairly recent listing. It was doing very well for an extended period of time. Obviously, had that takeover offer on the table, and that was pulled. And then the share price did fall away. But as you point out, it is quite a fundamentally sound business. It's got a growing earnings stream at the moment. It's got very low levels of debt. And it's got zero debt, basically, a cash positive position. So it's a business that has quite good prospects in the domestic market. I did read the other day that they are looking to sort of expand overseas under the OFX brand, I think it was. And that might be spooking the market a little bit as well. Obviously, if they're taking on all these acquisition plans, where's the market going to come from? Where's the funding going to come from? These sorts of things. So it's not one that I follow too closely, but I'll be more comfortable in picking up around these levels than, say, previously where it was trading high just before the takeover offer.
Okay, I mean, the non-binding sort of bid was supposed to be around about 350 to 370 for this stock. And when they pulled out, you know, the market was questioning why they pulled out. And then also, you know, the weaker earnings guidance coming through as well. Nick, looking at Ausforex, what do you think?
Well, that's a pretty nasty gap down, and that's obviously done a little bit of a damage to holders there without a shadow of a doubt. So generally speaking, after such a big capitulation like we've seen there, I mean, it's going to take time to turn that around. This market's been hurt badly. Usually we see a three-stage turnaround. Capitulation is stage one. That may not be over yet. I have no doubt that any strength that comes into this, you're going to have some sellers sitting up there waiting for the bounce to sell into. So there's going to be some supply sitting over the top of this, which would suggest to me that we're going to see an extended sideways period at best, unless we have someone else come in. But, you know, they've obviously been scared away for some reason. So at best, sideways consolidation for many, many months. Once that selling is dried up, then you might see some bids come back in. But for now, I wouldn't be touching that, unfortunately.
Okay, so not going near Ausforex from Nick. Ausforex still keeping to its target of trying to double its revenue by 2019 to $200 million. So let's see whether they're able to do that. Let's go to our next caller. We've got Lance on the line from Melbourne. Lance, welcome to the show. How can we help you tonight?
Well, thank you, Julia and panel. I've been watching two shares. The first one is Retail Food Group, RFG, and the second one is Nanosonics, NAN. I just value the panel's view of where those shares are going.
Sure. So let's start off with Retail Food Group. You know, all the yummy things. I think this comes up almost every week. Michelle's Patisserie, Donut King, a whole lot of pizza businesses as well. Nick, looking at Retail Food Group, what do you think of the chart at the moment?
Yeah, this is a good example of what I was just talking about with Oz Forex. I mean, we've got a stock here that was trading up at $8, last year, early last year, and has spent the year declining and got down to a low of around that $4 area. And that, I won't say it's capitulation per se. There looks like there's certainly some big sell-offs in that. But after that decline, we saw this base building for an extended period of time. That had started in September, October last year. So 6 months of sideways price action, and then all of a sudden, Lance, we've popped out of that and we've started moving up again. And that's the same kind of thing I'm talking about to expect with something like Oz Forex. So it looks pretty good here at the moment. It's come a long way very quickly. A little pause here would be very healthy. Trend is now up. That's got a good base behind it, and it doesn't look too bad. Might consolidate for a little while, but at this stage, expect a little bit of a pause, and hopefully the trend can continue.
Okay, so liking Retail Food Group over here, RFG's the stock code. How about you, Michael?
Yeah, look, Retail Food Group, again, it's one of these fundamentally sound businesses. It's dividing opinion at the moment. It is taking on quite an aggressive acquisition strategy at this point in time. They've got some very strong brands under their umbrella, things like Gloria Jean's Coffee, I think it is. Mm. They've managed to turn around Michelle's Patisserie. So they do certainly have things going for them at the moment. But as a broader sort of thing we're seeing at the markets at the moment, people are getting spooked by these aggressive roll-up strategies. They've taken on a bit more debt than they have in the past, and that might be spooking a few investors. We've seen similar sorts of things with the likes of Capital Health in the past, and this just sort of fits into that category. It's not one that's we're investing in at the moment for our clients, but it certainly is one that we are keeping an eye on, given it does have very strong fundamentals, growing revenues, growing earnings, high return on equity, a manageable level of debt at this stage, although that has picked up somewhat in recent times.
Okay, and I think the other stock was Nanosonics. NAN's the stock code there. This is one that's been going fantastically well. If we can try and bring up the stock chart here, the stock's up just 28% over the last 3 months. Since September, it looks like the share price almost doubling there from about $1.20 to a high of about $2.22.
Yeah.
Nick, can this trend continue? It has been pretty steep, pretty aggressive.
Look, it looks fine. We're at all-time, well, just shy of all-time highs. We've just been there, and I think this little setback in the last few days has probably put the halt on that. I think sentiment, broader market sentiment might put the brakes on it a little bit, but if we can see broader market sentiment pick up again, which I think we will, then this is the kind of stock you want to get on. It's a smaller cap, it's moving fast, it's trending well, it's at all-time highs, and it's a leader at the moment. So when the market sentiment picks up, I would suggest that this one is going to pick up as well. So it broke out to all-time highs. I'd like to see some consolidation here, Lance. If we can get a few weeks going sideways, it'll be a very, very healthy thing. And then if it pops out to new highs, I'd be on board that myself.
Okay, so fantastic run up. This is a company that looks at the commercialization of infection control. So really its key product is, disinfecting those ultrasound probes. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, look, it's one of those very volatile biotechnology businesses. It's not one that we invest in for various reasons, pretty much just given its variability. So it's a company, look, it's got prospects long term. It's released a couple of positive trial results in the last sort of 6 months or so, and hence why the share price has performed as it has. But you've got to be careful with these sorts of companies. It probably is best to lock in profits as it does start to run, because it can sort of very quickly turn against you as well. But the trend at the moment is undeniably strong. And if you've got the stomach for these sorts of companies, and by all means, this is probably one of the better ones to follow.
Okay, and I guess looking at a company like this, you're seeing rapid growth in terms of sales, but that's not really translating to profit, because they are reinvesting, because it's going to be a global company and global sales. So reinvesting some of that revenue means that it could.
Yeah, look in time. At this stage, it's never made a profit. And one of our base investment cases for many of our clients who are self-funded retirees, self-managed super funds, is the company needs to be profitable. So we prefer a biotech company such as maybe Certex Medical, which has a bit of a platform and a base underneath it. That way, it's got an operation that's generating cash flow, which can fund their expansion with ease going forward. Companies like this often have to go to the market, raise further capital to keep funding their expansion, and that may dilute the share price over time as well, which is something to be cautious of.
Okay. And I guess, Nick, just having a look at the share price chart, obviously the price momentum's there and you would like to see a bit of a pause. When you do see that revenue momentum without the earnings momentum, does that worry you?
We don't look at fundamental momentum in any way, shape or form. We're just looking at price momentum. That's That's what makes you the money. If the price is going up, that's what's going to make the money. And, you know, a lot of these stocks forward price things, and that's what it's all about at the moment. They may not be making money now, but the market obviously likes it. A stock doesn't make new all-time highs in a bearish market environment for no reason whatsoever. And that's all we're concerned about. So we look at the price, the speed of the momentum, and we also look at the volatility as well, take that into account. But certainly a good-looking share price to me.
So, Nick, would you be comfortable buying in at these levels?
Sure, I've got no problems whatsoever. Okay. Absolutely no problems
on
whatsoever.
On that note, that was Nanosonics, who were talking about NAM, the stock code. We're going to be back with more after this short break. If you'd like to speak with our expert panel, our number's 1300 30 34 35, or you can email us yourmoney@skynews.com.au. Welcome back to the program. Let's go straight to our next caller. We have Robert on the line. Robert, welcome to the show. How can we help you?
Thanks, Julia, and to Michael and Nick. Mainly for Michael, fundamental question, Michael. I'm a long-term holder. I've had CSL, Cochlear, and longest, highest ratings I've had for about 15 years, so I'm very happy with all those. Just a small one, as you've seen, Michael, I've got a few fundamentals. I just want to check them with you on Capilano Honey. The current return on equity, I believe, about 23%. EPS about 91 cents and the debt is only about 18%. Could you confirm those? I just thought it was a pretty interesting little company.
Yes, certainly, Robert. Thanks for the question. This is one that we've actually had clients into for a while and done very well out of, and it's one of these companies that fundamentally ticks all our boxes. If you look at the balance sheet of the business, it's been growing its return on equity consistently over the last few years, and that's in the face of actually paying down debt and improving its cash position. So the company has a lot of momentum going for it. It's sort of settled down a little bit in recent times, and the chart at the moment is forming a bit of a pincer move, if you like. I'm sure Nick will cover that in a moment. But look, it is a business that's got a lot of sort of macro elements in its favour as well. Australia is one of the only countries, if not the only country in the world, not to be affected by some virus that's been killing bee colonies over in Europe and in the US. So there's an undersupply of honey globally at the moment, and that's been consistent for the last few years. So it's perfect dynamics to be in, and it's a company that fundamentally is able to take advantage of those dynamics going forward. So we've got the price of honey, which has been going up and going through the roof in recent times. It's been increasing, I think, about 6% for the last 2 years in a row over in the United States, and demand is growing as well. So overall, it's a company that we quite like fundamentally, and we've been locking in profits for a lot of clients, but it's starting to consolidate. So it's time to take some profits off the table, but if we start to see it break high, we'll start to look to get in as well.
Okay, I mean, Capilano Honey, this is looking interesting from a technical viewpoint as well, Nick, because it looks like we are at a crucial support line of $18. It has come back to this level a number of times. Mm. What do you think when you look at a chart like this?
Yeah, look, I think it looks great. And I think if someone is looking to put or meld the fundamentals with the technicals, this is a very good example of how to do it, okay? And we have a lot of clients that do this kind of stuff. The fundamentals give you the background, the technicals can give you the entry timing, if you like. Now, we've had a very good trend over the last 2 years. This stock has moved from $4 to $24. Fabulous momentum, and a stock with historic momentum like that will tend to continue to do that in the future. So over the last 6 months, we've had some great consolidation, and as anybody who has watched me over the years will know that that's a very, very healthy thing in my view. Now, fundamentally, as Michael said, it particularly looks nice and strong. We've come back to this support level, which is a zone actually, not a specific level, and that sits between $16 and $18. And the chart shows that each time we probe down into this area, buyers step in. And we can see that because the closes are at the upper end of the bar when we probe down into that area. So technically, we're sitting on a level of support or very, very close to it. And fundamentally, we've got a very strong stock. So this is the kind of area right here, right now, where you'd want to be buying it. A lot of people don't like to buy strength. It goes against human nature. And that's all good and well and fine. So if you're against buying strength, what you want to do is buy against support. And that's where we are right now. So this 16 to 18 area right here, right now, is good, strong support. We've got a solid, fundamentally driven company. And this is the time to jump on board and combine the two right here.
Okay, so Capilano Honey, interesting times here around the $18 mark. CZZ is the stock code there. Let's now go to our caller from Queensland. Lisa, welcome to the show. How can we help you out tonight?
Hi, Julia, and hello, fellas. I love Tuesday night, Julia. I always love hearing your views. I was just wondering, when the prices are a bit lower, you're on the big four banks, so I got into them when, the price is a bit lower. And other than today, they've all been up pretty, high. And I was wondering if you think that they're a hold or a sell, please.
Sure. So really nice work from Lisa getting into the big four banks at the lower levels, because we've seen an extremely strong bounce up for the banks over the last few weeks. So congratulations, Lisa. Wondering if it's a hold or a sell at the moment. And we might start off with Nick to have a look at technical.
Sure. Thanks, Lisa. On the front page of the ASX website, you'll see a 5 or 6 page report that I've written on all the banks. And I won't say that was a bearish report, but I will say it's not particularly bullish. My view is the banks are going to go through broad consolidation, maybe with some potential more downside bias, but they are certainly not going to see new highs anytime soon. And I'm not talking about in the next 6 to 8 months. I'm talking about the next 3 to 4 years. So CBA is probably the benchmark that you want to be keeping a look at. It is showing itself to be the strongest out of a lot of them in terms of a relative strength. And there's very, very strong support down there at $70, which we've just bounced off. So it may well be that that will become the floor in CBA at least. And I would suggest that we'll see bounces above that kind of a level. But I'm still not convinced that we can't see any further downside in the short term. So certainly, I'm not excited about any bullish move, but if you're into trading the ranges, say buying at $70 and selling out at $80, $85 and doing that a few times, fine. But I cannot see banks going to new highs anytime soon.
Okay, so, I mean, that's been a pretty popular trade on the market, buying Commonwealth Bank around the $70 levels and selling it just above $80. Do you think that trade's still intact? That
range, well, it's intact still until it's not. I mean, that's the bottom line. No one's going to know. I mean, the more it rotates down to $70 and, the weaker the economy becomes, the more likely it's going to break. But, you know, it's a risky trade, but I guess from the yield perspective, and if someone is willing to hold on, if it does break that support, fine. But the more people that do it, the more cautious you've got to be about it.
I mean, the last few weeks we've been concentrating on negative interest rates coming through from the European central banks, and some of that money has found its way into the high-yielding Aussie dollar and higher-yielding stocks like the banks. But this week's a little bit different because we're concentrating now on the US Federal Reserve and the prospect that the US will raise interest rates. Do you think that's going to make the banks look less attractive to international investors?
Look, ultimately, I do think it's the credit growth that really does determine the value of the banks. If you look back over the last 30 years in this country, we've had interest rates come down from around 15%, and now they're set at 2%. So it's been the perfect environment for credit expansion. Housing prices have gone through the roof. So in many ways, it's been the perfect storm for the banking sector. So going forward, you have to ask yourself whether those conditions will be replicated again to help generate the profit growth that the banks have enjoyed over the last few years or so. And you'd have to question that. You obviously got APRA, the banking regulator, which is cracking down on the amount of leverage that these banks can take on their mortgage book. You've got APRA increasing the amount of idle cash sitting on the bank's balance sheet. So what this does is it puts downward pressure on return on equity and eventually puts downward pressure on profit growth going forward. It's not to say that the bank's necessarily going to fall off a cliff anytime soon. It's just that we think the biggest part of the total return picture for the banks is probably going to come from dividend yield, and capital growth might be the little sort of cherry on top. You've got to be very selective where you do get in the banks these days. Probably around the $70 mark for Commonwealth Bank's quite attractive. Our preferred pick is probably Commonwealth Bank and Westpac. Given the size of their mortgage book, they benefit the most from any sort of mortgage repricing that we saw last year. And we don't really necessarily like ANZ that much, given their exposure to the mining sector, the lagging dairy industry over in New Zealand, and their exposure to China with their overseas Asian business. So you've got to be very cautious, and I think probably the best days in terms of profit growth are behind the banks for now.
Okay, so the longer-term outlook, not looking too crash hot for the banks. I guess, Lisa, if you're looking to trade them short-term, one of the things that you could do is just a trailing stop loss, so just riding those shares up as they go up but being stopped out as they come back down. So that was on the bank shares. It is now time for a short break, but if you'd like to speak with our expert panel, we'd love to hear from you. The number's 1300 30 34 35, or you can email us yourmoney@skynews.com.au. Welcome back to the program. We have Michael Wayne from COSEC on the line today and also Nick Raj from the Charters joining us. So if you have a question you'd like answered, please give us a call. The number's 1300 30 34 35 or you can email yourmoney@skynews.com.au. And we now have Warwick on the line from Sydney. Warwick, welcome to the program. What's your question for our panel tonight? Hi.
Hi, Julie and Wayne. I just wanted to know your feelings on Bega Cheese and their partnerships with Blackmores.
Sure.
I see Blackmores going up and also Bega Cheese is sort of going up and down a bit.
Sure. I mean, both of these have seen a pretty substantial pullback over the last couple of months, and I guess a lot of growth-related stocks have also seen a pretty big pullback around the globe. It's seems that people are re-rating some of these growth stocks and moving back into value stocks. But I held Bega for a while, first got in at 465, but unfortunately I've been stopped out. And I guess just having a look at milk prices, Bega Cheese is still very much exposed to milk powder prices. And if we have a look at where Fonterra set their milk prices last week, it was once again lower, so quite substantially lower as well. So while Bega is trying to move into some of those higher margin products like infant formula, it is still highly exposed to that milk powder and that milk price. So unfortunately, share price coming down. Is it an opportunity to buy, do you think,
Look,
Michael?
It's an interesting prospect. It's one of those companies that's benefited enormously from that demand for dairy products. They have a supply arrangement with Bellamy's, so everyone knows the story about Bellamy's these days, the infant milk formula. But unfortunately for Bega, they were just supplying the dairy product. They weren't actually part of the value-add process. They're looking to rectify that this time around with a similar sort of agreement with Blackmores to supply them with the milk. But this time around, they've got a profit-sharing agreement in place with Blackmores. So if they're able to get the same sort of demand going with the Blackmores product as the Bellamy's product, then that should be a long-term benefit for Bega. It is very much an agricultural business, so the earnings can be quite volatile and at the mercy of the dairy price, for example. But it is a company that is quite fundamentally sound, and if they can get this agreement working well with Blackmores, then there's no reason why they can't do well. They recently lost a contract with Coles, but I suppose that's been more than made up with the contract they now have with Blackmores. One point of caution at the moment, there's a bit of concern about what's called the grey market over in China. So essentially what's been happening is a lot of tourists have been coming over to Australia, they've been filling up their suitcases full of Bellamy's or A2 milk, whatever it may be, Blackmores product, and then shipping it back to China and then on-selling it through the internet. But the issue at the moment is we get some sort of dodgy individuals over in China who are selling empty tins of Bellamy's products for, say, $25 just for the empty tin and then filling up with God knows what, really, and on-selling it as imitation Bellamy's products. So what we're seeing at the moment is the regulators in China are having a look at it. So that's why you're seeing a bit of negative sentiment, not just over Bega, but also Blackmores, A2 milk and Bellamy's. So I might wait for that coast to clear before jumping into something like Bega Cheese.
Okay, so just waiting a while before getting into Bega. How about you, Nick?
Yeah, well, it was a nice breakout there up at new high ground. Got a little ahead of itself, a parabolic rise, and that's always a warning sign when that occurs. And we've come back pretty stiffly to major support at 550. So at the moment, I would suggest best case is we're going to see some broad consolidation above 550. That's the best case. The risks are if we slip below that support, we could go into that long-winded sideways price action that we spent pretty well all of 2014 and 2015 in, and that's the risk. So at this stage, if we can hold 550 and consolidate over the next 3 to 4 months, and if this negative sentiment that's around at the moment can be removed, then potentially we've got some more upside, but it needs to do some consolidation here.
Okay, so looking for some consolidation for BGA, Bega Cheese. Let's go to our next caller. I've actually got one here from Alan, but Alan sent in a question regarding iCentia Group. He asked, what's happening with ISD? I have a small holding and wondering if I should hold or sell. Good question, because this has been a darling of the market, but it's come crashing down a little bit over the last couple of months from about the almost $5 mark to $3.50. So I guess he's wondering whether he should hold on to his shares here or whether he should look at selling. We'll go to Nick first, because this seems to be a question more around timing. What do you think?
Yeah, well, the trend is certainly down now at the moment. It's come back down towards that support around 320, 340. I would be concerned if we broke down through that. Trend is certainly down now. It's going to need some work to turn around in the short term, and will only exacerbate if we go down through that 320, 330 area. So I wouldn't be touching it here. Buyers have stepped in. I guess if you had a strong fundamental view of it, Michael might be able to shed some light on that. We are sitting on reasonably good solid support, so if you wanted to lean against that support, probably now is the time to put your toe in the water. But I wouldn't be hanging around too long if we broke that support.
Okay, and Accenture, I guess it looks at media monitoring, so all the blue chip companies, they use this service to try and track what's being said in the media about them. What do you think of Accenture?
We don't mind Accenture. It's one we've been sort of monitoring for a while, but it always seemed a little bit too expensive. It's one of these companies that actually reported quite strongly in the most recent reporting season, yet the market sold it off anyway. It's almost as though the market expectations for this business probably got a bit too far ahead of itself, and now it's coming back and the market is re-rating it somewhat. It's a capital light business, so it generates enormous amount of free cash flow, and its client base tends to be very, very sticky, so it's quite good for predictability of revenues and earnings going forward. So it's a business that we'll be starting to pay a little bit more attention to now that it has come back, but there was concerns going forward about its future growth prospects and how they're going to start winning new business. It's a business that floated, I think, a few years ago, had enormous run-up, enormous growth very quickly. It's just what's going to drive the next leg of growth for this company. So high-quality business, a very sound balance sheet. It's just about entering it at the right price, in our opinion.
Okay, and what do you think of competition? It is a market leader in this area, but it's trying to expand in that Asia-Pacific region. Do you see any risks there?
Well, obviously, any company in Australia really that expands overseas starts to have troubles. We only have to look at things like NAB, for example. Even the results of Telstra in the last couple of days have shown that. They dominate the domestic market. They've got a monopoly, essentially. Every time someone gets interviewed, whether it's a politician or a sportsman, you always see the Accenture microphone just down in front of them. And basically, they're just capturing all that information, all that intelligence, and then selling it on to people that need it, whether it's the media or corporations. So they've got the niche domestically. Given they are a business with a very low level of debt and enormous cash flow generation, they can fund this expansion overseas without taking on debt. So that might be one of the attractions, but at the moment that's been the concern for this business. Where do they do get that next leg of growth? Because the domestic market's mature, they completely dominate it. It's just whether or not they can make a success of moving overseas.
Okay, so that was Accenture. ISD is the stock code there. We did have Sue on the line from Melbourne, but unfortunately it's dropped out. But I think Sue was asking the panel about what they think of Australian Agricultural Company and Ridley Corporation. So having a look at the agricultural space in Australia, there aren't that many stocks, and Sue's covered probably most of the stocks in that area. We'll start off with Michael this time. And what do you think, Michael?
Look, it's a business in that agricultural space, obviously. It's got very, very volatile earnings, like most companies in that space. But long term, you'd have to think Australia could potentially be the food bowl to Asia. You keep hearing all these sorts of stories. So this is one of the companies that could potentially capitalise on that. But from our perspective, being analysts and trying to value a business like this, given the volatility in earnings, it makes it very hard for us to extrapolate their future earnings path, therefore makes it very hard to value the company. So you'll see the share price does tend to jump around a lot. I think it's been up close to $1.70. It's now settled down around the $1.20 mark. It's not a business that I'll be owning anytime soon, but if you have a view of whether this company can capitalise on the boom in Asia, then potentially might be one that you're looking for that agricultural exposure to your portfolio. But in my opinion, I prefer something like Bega, like we discussed previously, than something like AAC.
Okay, so looking at Australian Agriculture Co, you know, you're looking at cattle. And last year, cattle prices were at a record high. But, you know, it's not too hard to bring on more capital. And I guess conditions are pretty difficult at the moment with the drought as well.
Yeah, if you look at it from a technical perspective, really since 2009, after the GFC there, the stock has moved in a very broad basing pattern. The upper end of that is around that 360 mark, and we're now sort of halfway through that. It really doesn't trend particularly well, or at least it hasn't since 2009. And quite frankly, right here, right now, the trend is down in our view, albeit really it's still within a broader range. I think we need to break out to new high ground up through that 360 area before I'd get any excitement going for some kind of a sustainable trend to the upside. It's just very, very messy price action in my view.
Okay, so what about Ridley Corp? It's the Australia's largest supplier of animal nutrition products. It operates from about 19 facilities. RIC is the stock code there. Michael, what do you think of this?
It's a similar sort of story, I suppose, to the mining services company, or this is more of a sort of agricultural services company. So it is at the mercy, really, of the agricultural prices. So if you have enormous demand for beef and cattle prices are doing well, then this is a company that should tend to do well in that environment. But then again, if things do go off the ball in that space, this is a company that will start to struggle. And look, that's reflected again in their balance sheet. Most of these agricultural type stocks tend to be very volatile and tend to have a lot of variables involved. So it's not a space that we delve in too much detail in, to be honest.
Okay, and the agricultural space tends to be cyclical. Nick, are you seeing that on the charts at all?
Not really. We don't look at those kinds of things. We take each individual stock for themselves, and you will get groups of stocks in the same sector, obviously producing some nice trends. We saw it a few years ago with the telcos, that kind of stuff. So we don't look at it like that. Some nice trends here, though, in RIC. We picked up a nice trend from about 80 cents up to that recent highs around the 150. Trend is now down, so we're out of that position at the moment. And perhaps look for some consolidation. So it looks like the stock has done very, very well, but more recent negative sentiment has just put the brakes on the trend for the moment. And like everything in this particular area, we'd expect some consolidation here. So it trends well, has a history of trending well, which is always a great thing to see. But at the moment, consolidation. So we're steered clear of this one.
Okay. And we do have our next caller on the line. So let's go straight to Peter from Melbourne. Peter, welcome to the show. What's your question tonight?
How are you, Julia?
Good. How are you doing?
Excuse me. I'm interested in what the panel thinks about SEEK. It's gone up quite a bit since its report. And I'm just wondering what they think about the future for SEEK. I've already bought some, but I didn't get them at the low.
Sure. So Peter's already bought some of the SEEK shares. SEK is the stock code there. We did see earnings season, and after earnings season, the share price rising quite substantially for SEEK. So good work on getting in on SEEK and seeing that rise in price, Peter. Looking at the outlook for SEEK, what do you think, Michael?
It's a company that really we do like. It had a few issues the last sort of year or so with their education business, but it really seems to have turned the corner with this most recent report. The domestic operations, as we all know, really does dominate the landscape when it comes to job classifieds. And I think revenue even this time around still managed to grow by about 15% or so. But I think the most exciting aspect for SEEK is really their overseas operations. They own a minority stake in 8 of the largest online jobs classified website in about 7 or 8 emerging nations, I think it is. This is places like Thailand, like China, Mexico, Brazil, Vietnam. So it's very conceivable that over time that this overseas operation will start to dwarf the domestic operations. The overseas business is growing at in excess of 30% a year in terms of revenue and earnings. And if you consider the size of the population, it is one of those very much a growth aspect of the business. So they basically use the domestic operations to generate that free cash flow, the more mature business, to fund their ongoing expansion overseas. They own a stake in Zaoping, 62% of Zaoping, which is the largest job classified website or equal largest in China. So that again for them is a very sort of exciting prospect. So the business meets all our criteria fundamentally, and the story surrounding SEEK is very strong as well. So it's definitely a business that we like, and we like it even more so after this report, now that it's shown that it's turned the corner in many ways.
Okay, so would you be happy buying at these?
Yes, certainly. It's one we've been getting clients into and done very well out of. We didn't necessarily have all our clients in before the report, but we got in very early after the report and continue to do well after that.
Okay, so liking SEEK at these levels. How about you, Nick? It's been a bit volatile.
It has been volatile. Technically, it looks okay, especially in the shorter term. I wouldn't be surprised to see it pull back just a little bit from here. Some good support at 15. We might just go under that a little bit. But I think, you know, technically it looks pretty good, and we probably will see it at least test up to its all-time highs up there around the $19 mark. And if that trend can occur in a swift and firm way, then potentially we'll go through that and head on higher. So I think it looks okay.
Okay, so nice work, Peter. It looks like both our panellists liking SEEK, S-E-K, the stock code there. We are going to take a short break, but we'll be back to answer more of your questions in just a moment. Welcome back to the show. If you have a question you'd like answered, please pick up the phone, give us a call on 1300 30 34 35, or you can always email us on yourmoney@skynews.com.au. And we now have Andrew on the line from Melbourne. Andrew, welcome to the show. How can we help you out tonight?
Thank you, Julia, for taking my call, and good evening, panel. I've been a very long-term holder of Bendigo Bank, actually, since before it was a building society.
Wow.
And enjoyed the rise up to north of $10, but took my eye off the ball recently and saw that it's dropped back to $8.
Yes.
So I was just wondering whether there's anything behind that and what the panel's opinion is of that stock. And also, I've been a long-term holder of some American stocks on the New York Stock Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've enjoyed the decline in the Australian dollar from parity down to its current levels.
Mm.
But note that it's starting to drift up again. I was just wanting the panel's opinion on that sort of circumstance as well.
Sure. So really good questions coming through from Andrew. First of all, Bendigo and Adelaide Bank, and then talking about sort of US stocks and especially the currency moves with the Australian dollar depreciation having worked in a lot of investors' favour, but currently with the Aussie dollar and the strength that we've seen in the last few weeks and whether that Aussie dollar strength is sustainable. Let's start off with Bendigo and Adelaide, though, because these regional banks, I think, are looking pretty interesting, probably more from a negative viewpoint than anything else. We concentrate a lot on the big four banks and how much of the big four banks are shorted. But in fact, Bendigo and Adelaide and Bank of Queensland, by far in terms of percentage of stock, is shorted a lot more than the big four. I think Commonwealth Bank is about 1.3% worth of stock shorted. Bendigo and Adelaide, I think it's actually north of 6%, which is quite a lot. So we'll start off with Nick. Technically, how's this one looking?
Yeah, well, like the other banks, less so. Bendigo is looking pretty weak here. It's stepping down, lower lows, lower highs. Each time we probe back up, it meets the prior low point and then reverses. And we've just seen that. It's just probed up to $10, which was the low point mid last year, and we're now starting to push down again. So I don't know, it's $10 is a bit of a line in the sand. Andrew, I'd like to see it get up through there and stay through there to gain any confidence, but below $10, I'm sorry, I just don't have a great deal of confidence in it. We did see some good buyer demand down towards that $8 area early January. We were down there. I wouldn't be surprised to see that again. But that buy demand really has to step up to add support into there. So I think we will test back down that way.
Okay. And I guess, Michael, we've been talking about the banks and some of the challenges coming through and the regionals facing a lot of competition.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition. And given their size as well, their funding costs tend to be substantially higher than the big four banks. So we saw earlier in the year credit markets overseas freeze up. So that pushed up the cost of borrowing, not only for Bendigo Bank, but for the big four banks as well. But as I was saying, given the size of these banks, it starts to hurt them more. Their net interest margins are under more pressure as well. Companies like Bendigo Bank, like Suncorp, Bank of Queensland, they're also forced by APRA to use what's called a standardised risk model. So essentially against their mortgage book, they're forced to hold about, I think it's about 35, 40% cash, whatever it may be. And when you look at the big four banks, they've got their internal risk models, which mean they only have to hold less against their book of mortgages. So that in time might start to narrow, and it already is. The big four banks are being forced by APRA to increase those risk weightings, but at the moment Bendigo Bank's at a competitive disadvantage. They've also got higher funding costs given their size, so they're being squeezed from a number of different angles. So it's one that we're cautious of. Has been attractive in the past. As it gets lower, the dividend yield starts to become very attractive, but given we're sort of sceptical in the overall banking space, Bendigo Bank is not one that we're looking at either.
Okay, so not looking at Bendigo and Adelaide Bank. And Nick, not really confident on Bendigo and Adelaide unless it breaks through that $10 mark. What about the US dollar and US dominated stocks? Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I went long the Aussie dollar just last week at 73.50, purely from a momentum perspective. It has put in a good basing pattern there, and that's a very strong pattern. Doesn't mean it's going to go any higher, but at the moment the trend is up, so I'm happy to ride with that for the moment. You'd have to think that the Fed is in a rate hike mode, the RBA is in a rate cut mode, so one would assume that the Aussie dollar will go lower rather than higher. So what do I know about fundamentals, though? It's trends up at the moment. I'm happy to stay with that.
Okay, let's go to our next call. I've got Michael on the line from Brisbane. Michael, welcome to the show. What's your question for our panel tonight?
Yeah, thanks, Julia. I called this week Pierre Charter, they're an independence group. It behaved exactly like he said it thought it would, so that's good. Got some more at 295. Interested in your Charter's thoughts. Target last week from the fellow was 360. Just interested.
Sure.
Thanks.
So independence group, interesting things happening in terms of this stock price. A lot of the gold miners have been seeing a pretty sharp pullback. We haven't really seen that with independence group. Some talk around the traps that they could possibly be looking at a sale of their Tropicana asset, which seems to be holding up the share price. Looking at the chart, though, Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. One thing that stands out here is the significant increase in volume over the last 6 or 7 months, and it's tripled on a consistent basis. So that's quite interesting. And from a technical perspective, if we look at classical technical analysis, we've had a falling wedge which was triggered in early January, and usually we'll see a measured move for that up around that 370, 380 kind of area. It usually returns to the start of that pattern. So that's what I would anticipate. A little bit choppy on the way up. I normally like to see it impulse a little bit stronger than what we've seen. On the downside, you know, there's some good support just below here, but that volume is very interesting at the moment. Something certainly is going on there.
Okay, so lots of volume in Independence Group. It has the Tropicana assets of gold and also the Nerva assets of nickel.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, it's been doing well in recent times given the pickup in gold that we've seen. Australian dollar gold price has been approaching all-time highs given the falling Australian dollar and US dollars. Gold is priced in US dollars, so that's given it a bit of a boost. But I think gold makes up about 30% of their operations. The rest come from nickel and copper. And as we know from Clive Palmer's issues with nickel at the moment, the nickel price is under enormous pressure. So this business, in the end of the day, it is a price taker. It's at the mercy of the prevailing market price of gold, nickel, copper. So it's not one that we've been touching in this environment, although it has had a bit of respite given the performance of gold that we've seen.
Okay, so that was Independence Group. IGO is the stock code there. It is time for a short break, but we'll be back with more of your calls in just a moment. Welcome back to the program. We do have our next caller on the line. So let's go to Aidan from Sydney. Aidan, welcome to the program. What's your question tonight for our panel? Hi, Aidan. Do we have you there? Adan?
Hi.
I'm here. Sorry, I must have... to have you on. How can we help you out tonight?
Yeah, my question is about Monash IVF, MBS. I purchased it about 6 months ago. I just want to find out whether I should hold on or whether I should sell it.
Sure. So, good question. Looking at Monash IVF, bought in 6 months ago, so doing relatively well. We have recently just seen a jump in Monash as well on the back of those results coming through, and the stock today, $1.71.5. So let's look at MVF. We might look at a fundamental view first. So let's go to Michael. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, it's a fairly recent listing, so there's not too much data really to go on. I have a limited understanding of this business. Obviously, it's in IVF treatment, basically dominates the markets, particularly in Northern Territory and in South Australia. And the long-term dynamics for this company in this sector are quite good. Obviously, in the developed world, a lot of women are pushing back pregnancy, and it's becoming more and more in demand, these sorts of services. One of the issues I understand this business was having was clinicians. So they need to sort of get really high-skilled individuals to come and really support the business growth, and they're not that easy to come by. So it actually limits their growth potentially going forward. Many of these people as well, they tend to be older, so they're moving on and then retiring and those sorts of things. So that's the biggest issue for this company with their growth prospects going forward. I understand they're moving into Malaysia and places like that as well, but it's a business that we're not investing in. It is one that we do follow a little bit, but I haven't got too much knowledge on it overall.
Okay. Looking at Monash, I mean, interesting, revenues were up really strongly, about 32% in their last result. But ultrasound revenue was actually up by more than 200%. So it looks like they're not only, you know, cashing in on people looking to having difficulty having babies and assisting there, but also on the ultrasound revenues as well. And I remember when I was pregnant, my obstetrician would send me to an ultrasound, a separate facility to get the ultrasounds done. So I guess just looking at this IVF area, there has been a lot of competition coming through. Do you like any of the IVF providers?
It's not one that, as I said, I'm too familiar with. I'm not even sure. I think there is one more on our market listed, is that right?
Yeah, there's another one listed.
I forget the name of it now, it eludes me. They tend to be sort of smaller operations, smaller businesses. They are growing over time, but it's at this stage it hasn't really caught our eye.
Okay. And just looking at the chart for this one, what do you think?
Yeah, look, there's not too much data there. In more recent times, we're in an uptrend. We're at 12-month highs here. It looks okay. We're consolidating. Well, I'd like to see some consolidation above 169, 170. If we can do that, we might test back up towards the list price, I think looks like around that $2 mark. But if we break back down through 169, we might just go back into a bit of a range where the downside is around 140. So not much to go off there. Hasn't been around very long.
OK, so that was Monash IVF. The other IVF company, I think, is Virtus, VRT, which is on our market. We've now got an email. We've got this email from Andrew, and Andrew's asked, can you ask what your medium to long-term thoughts are on C-Farm Group, SFG? So looking at C-Farm Group, let's try and bring up a share price chart of SFG. And look, another stock that's been doing relatively well over the last 6 months. We saw a big jump up sort of in December. It's managed to hold on to some of that. It's around the 8-cent mark at the moment. Very small company, about $69 million market cap. Just looking at the chart first, Nick, what are your thoughts around this?
Well, the first thing that hits me here is incredibly illiquid chart, incredibly illiquid stock, which doesn't tend toward good technical analysis. Very volatile. We seem to get some big spikes, big moves, don't get me wrong, but they reverse very, very quickly. So certainly a trader's market. We've just done that a couple of times up to those recent highs around 10 cents and come straight back again. So very volatile, but you know, at the end of the day, such an illiquid stock, it's not going to take too much to move it around. And technically, there's not a great deal of data there to play with.
Not a lot of data to play with because this is a backdoor listing. I think it was around about May or June last year where it went from being commodities company to sea farms and aquaculture. Any thoughts around aquaculture?
Well, aquaculture's been doing well. I think they're involved in prawns, something like prawn farming, I think it was. So we've seen companies like Tassal, for example, doing relatively well. These companies, they supply into the Asian market and to the domestic market as well. So the demand for these sorts of things is there. But again, it's a smaller company. It is very volatile. The data really is quite variable if you look at their balance sheet. So it doesn't sort of meet our criteria in terms of an investment. I understand they're doing some things around sort of the environment and planting trees as well, and that might be an interesting aspect to their business, but again, it's not one that we're too familiar. It sits outside the ASX 300, and given the volatility in share price, it's not one that we'll be getting our clients invested into.
Okay, and I guess just looking at the general market at the moment, and this, I guess, is my turn to pick your brain, and just looking at picking up particular stocks in the market. I know, Nick, you've said that you've moved from being up substantially in cash to investing around 20% of that recently.
Small cap industrials is where we're focusing at the moment. Look, the market has obviously had a solid bounce being driven by those larger caps, you know, the banks and everything having the bounce. But there's sustainable trends occurring in the small cap industrial space, and that's kind of where we're focused at the moment. That's where we're seeing some of the more sustained trends come through.
Okay, can you share with us one of your favourites that you've picked?
ALU, I guess, is Altium is one of the ones been riding for quite some time. I'm personally in that, have been for quite some time. Gosh, what else have we got? Put me on the spot here. Gateway Lifestyles we've been on recently.
So they're two really interesting companies. I mean, Altium looking at the software for circuit boards and electronic boards, and it's been growing quite substantially. A favourite of the brokers as well, and the technicals, you're liking the momentum that you're seeing?
Well, it's just momentum, you know. That's all we do. It's an all-time highs or just below all-time highs, and that's the kind of thing we're after, you know. So momentum has served me well for 30 years. I'm happy to do it a little differently to everybody else, and academically it's now accepted, so I guess I'm happy.
And what about Gateway? This is an interesting premise. I mean, it's caravan and travel parks, but it sort of markets itself to the older generation and people retiring, So you get this sort of whatever structure you'd like on the land, and then you rent the land from Gateway. So GTY, the momentum there as well?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a newly listed stock and it's done very well since it did come on board. So, you know, that's what drove us to it. We don't look at what the company does. I have no real interest in what the company does, and we just follow those trends. So it served us well there for a little while. The trend is now starting to turn or consolidate, so we'll probably hop off. And if it starts going back up again, we'll hop back on again. It's okay. As simple as that.
And recently, Gateway just announcing a capital raising to fund some of their acquisitions. When you see that, you just take in on the capital raising to not dilute the stake?
Yeah, it depends on the size of it. This one wasn't overly large. Sometimes you get some of those very large capital raisings. After the GFC, there's some nasty ones. Mm-hmm. And that's when you've got to participate. If they're small, we're happy to let it slide.
Okay.
So this one, for example, we didn't participate in that one. But when the bigger ones are around, yeah, that can do some harm if you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. Any thoughts on those two stocks?
No, Altium is one that we quite like. It ticks all the boxes fundamentally. Basically involved with plastic circuit boards that go into your everyday electronics. Things like Bang & Olufsen, Rickhouse, some of the sort of companies that they do service. They've got a very sticky customer base. I think they charge them an annual subscription fee, and then that recurs over time. So the revenue for this company is quite predictable. They had a very strong report from memory. Their net profits are up about 35%. Their revenue growth is strong, and it is involved in telecommunications as well. Anything to do with sort of technology. It's a very high-quality technology business. Very, very few technology companies really on the ASX. So this is one that does tick all the boxes from a fundamental perspective. If you look at the return on equity, it's about sort of 60-70%, which is unsustainable long-term. But given where the company is, it's indicative of their growth profile at the moment. So it's a company that we have our eye on. We picked up a few sort of a while back, probably 6 months or so ago. So it's a company that we do like long-term as well.
Okay, and what about Gateway?
Gateway is not one I'm too familiar with. I'm not sure exactly sort of where we're going with this.
Relatively new, but what are some companies that you've been watching on the market?
Yeah, one, basically in this reporting season I mentioned earlier, we saw a lot of sort of high PE companies report quite well, yet they got penalised by the market. In some cases, they even upgraded their forward outlook statement or their earnings profile going forward. So one of those companies that really caught our eye was Mantra. Essentially, they're involved in accommodation, and one of these businesses that benefits enormously from the boom in tourism that we're seeing. The low Australian dollar, we're seeing a big pickup in inbound tourists coming from overseas. For example, the number of Chinese tourists that came into the country in 2015 reached the million mark for the first time ever. And basically, we're seeing about 11% increase in tourism across the board, about 17% increase in spending, and about 12 or 13% increase in the average length of the stay. So not only are more tourists coming, they're spending more and they're staying longer. And this is one of the company's mantra that tends to benefit from that. We also have low supply growth in accommodation, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, and that demand is far outstripping supply. So it's a company with a lot of benefits in its favour at the moment. So if the Aussie dollar stays around these levels or continues to go lower, then I expect Mantra to do quite well. Now that it's pulled back from 5.20 to about $4, I think, at one point there.
Okay, so lots of ideas there from both our panellists, Nick Raj from The Chartist and also Michael Wayne from COSEC. We now have an email here from John, and John asks, what does the panel think about Orocobre and Altura Mining, and will they keep long-term? Good question coming through. I mean, both lithium stocks, and while the material sector has been under pressure, we have seen lithium and graphite companies doing well in that sector. We'll start off by talking to Nick about the chart of Orocobre. What do you think of this one here?
Look, it looks very, very good. You can see that we had a big move up off the lows, and we're consolidating now around that sort of 230 to 270 area. That's a very, very good sign. And if we can break out, we're trying to break out right now, and if we can, we're going to push up to those old highs. So I think that looks really good. I don't mind that at all.
Okay, so liking this one, ORE is the stock code here. And what do you think, Michael?
Yeah, look, it's getting a lot of airtime at the moment, all these lithium and graphite. It's basically involved in the storage of energy, so battery-powered packs and things like that. So companies like Tesla, Elon Musk have sort of made these companies famous at the moment. I will caution, though, there are many businesses involved in this at the moment, but there'll only be a handful of them, if that really sort of end up making it. Again, it's in the mining space, so it is very, very volatile. They are price takers. They're at the mercy of the market price of graphite and things like that. So it's one that we are cautious of. It's one of the few commodities that has actually gone against the trend with the rest of the commodities. So I suppose suppose with these sorts of businesses, an idea might be to hold a small mini portfolio of them, because you're not really sure which one is going to sort of make it to the next stage. Make sure they're cashed up to fund their expansion going forward. But it's definitely in a space that has long-term growth potential if you do get it right.
Okay, so we're more and more technology and more use of graphite and lithium. What about Altura Mining, AGM and stuff?
Yeah, good solid trend there. Little liquid for our portfolios to actually trade that, but certainly a very, very solid trend underway. Used to be quite illiquid, now more liquidity is coming into it as that trend moves higher. But it's at 12-month highs and looks very, very good. Consolidation here, yeah, I like it.
Okay, so Nick liking both Orocobre as well as Altura Mining, and Michael saying maybe keep a portfolio of lithium graphite stocks because only some of them are going to make it. Let's go to our next caller. We have John on the line from New South Wales. John, welcome to the show. How can we help you tonight?
Hey, how you going?
Good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I was just wondering, Santos has had many takeover approaches. Do you think someone in the world will approach and give more money than what they want?
Sure. So I guess just talking about the potential for Santos to receive a takeover offer. The share price has rallied up in 2016, but of course it's been a pretty long ride down in 2015. So let's go to Michael first on whether he'd be comfortable holding Santos, whether he does see potential takeover activity in this stock, or, you know, whether he's positive because of the outlook for the oil price.
Yeah, look, John, Santos is not one that we're a huge fan of, given the exposure they've had to the oil and energy space. It's a company that's had a number of takeover offers in the last sort of few years or last year or so, and they've been knocked back time and time again, and yet the share price continues to go lower. They had an enormous capital raising as well, which diluted the share price, and I suppose our view of Santos comes down to our long-term view of the oil price. And the issue is we're not really sure where the oil price is heading over the medium term. Sure, it might recover towards that $40, $50 mark, but the reality is Santos probably isn't profitable at around those levels. It carries an enormous amount of debt, and a lot of that debt is denominated in US dollars. Although they've had a little relief in recent times, the reality is from $1.10 the Aussie dollar was at one point, it's fallen to as low as 70 US cents. My understanding was at one point there, for every 1 cent decline in the Aussie dollar, it was adding about $100 million of debt in Australian dollars to Santos's balance sheet. So the capital raising reduced that debt somewhat, yet they are still heavily indebted. If you are going to play that oil space, there are probably better prospects out there for a more mature business, something like a Woodside Petroleum, for a more growth-orientated business, something like an oil search. It's one thing to bear in mind, Santos was heavily involved in LNG, and what's occurred with the oil price coming back is the cost of production for a lot of these LNG projects has gone through the roof. The cost of production in Australia is significantly higher than the rest of the world, and it's unlikely that Santos will be profitable at anywhere around these prices of oil. So I wouldn't be touching Santos at this point in time.
Okay, so not touching Santos, preferring to stick to the safer plays of Woodside Petroleum and Oil Search. And I guess if you were positive on the oil price, Santos would be the most leverage on the upside and unfortunately on the downside as well. Looking at the chart, you know, we've seen a bit of a rally here. A lot of people are asking themselves, you know, the oil price has moved from about $30 to $40. Are we going to see more here?
It doesn't look good to me in any way, shape or form. This stock was $14 not so long ago. We've now just tagged three. Okay, we've moved up and that's great, but it's going to have to do a lot more work before we can gain any confidence that a sustained trend's going to come out of this. So I wouldn't be touching it. Best case scenario, I would suggest we're going to see an extended sideways period below $6. You would have to think there's a lot of supply sitting above this stock, a lot of people holding on, waiting for a bounce to sell, and that's just going to limit any upside. So, look, sideways consolidation is best. Worst case, the trend continues to the downside.
Okay, Nick, I'd be interested to get your opinion on BHP as well, because we know that about half of its revenue comes from that oil space, and we've seen the share price also moving slightly higher. Do you have the same type of view on BHP?
Again, same kind of thing. We've got a sustainable downtrend that has been in place for some time, and rarely do they just turn on a coin and flip back the other way. Certainly it can happen, but more often than not it doesn't. What we need to see is some kind of base building exercise the longer that takes, the better it is, the bigger the foundation it will build. And at the moment, that's just not showing its hand here in BHP. We'll bounce around a little bit, but in terms of any sustainable trend to the upside, doesn't look like that's going to form anytime soon.
Okay, so that was Santos and BHP that we were talking about. We are going to take a short break, but we'll be back to answer more of your questions in just a moment. Welcome back to the program. If you have a question about a stock or shares, our phone lines are open on 1300 30 34 35, or you can email us on yourmoney@skynews.com.au. And we have Andrew on the line from Brisbane. Andrew, welcome to the show. How can we help you today?
Hello, Julia. Hi. Just looking at Cochlear, just wondering, at the moment it's around about the $100. Is this a good entry point or will it go lower?
Okay, great question coming through, because we have seen a little bit of a pullback, not a huge one, to that $100 mark. And you're asking whether this is a good entry point for Cochlear shares. Hearing implants, what do you think, Nick?
We are long Cochlear from about June, July last year, riding that trend up. It just broke out pretty sharply there, Andrew, so I'm expecting to pull back a little bit further. $95 is very, very strong support. So if this negative sentiment that we've got going on this week continues, and I think it will, then potentially we may test back a little bit lower towards $95. Fundamentally, if it's a strong stock, fundamentally, if you think it is a strong stock, I should say, then that's the kind of area you want to buy it, around that $90, $95. If it slips below $90, we're going to be out of that. And your risk then is it goes back into the range. But if we can stay above 95, trend's still up, looks good.
Okay, so looking good. And, you know, it's not too far from its all-time record high. The stock did go ex-dividend not too long ago, so understandably we've seen a bit of a pullback. I noticed that just having a look at what some of the brokers are saying, and Goldman Sachs saying that, you know, if you're looking for that weaker Aussie dollar, well, you have Treasury Wine Estates, Cochlear and Aristocrat Leisure, but all of them have seen about a 20% expansion in terms of the PE ratio. So they are expensive. Would you be buying here, Michael?
Well, Cochlear is a long-term favourite of ours at COSEC, and it's a business with a lot of price momentum at the moment as well as earnings momentum. And if we take a sort of top-down approach with this company, the market is ginormous. There's essentially 250 million people worldwide who suffer from a hearing impairment. About 30 million of those can actually afford the cochlear ear implant, and only about 5% of those actually have the cochlear ear implant. So it's a company that has enormous growth potential. One of the concerns for Cochlear in recent years was, rather than selling new ear implants, they were only upgrading people with existing ear implants. But what this most recent half-yearly report showed was they're starting to really get some momentum back in new ear implant sales. So the Nucleus 6 has been gaining a lot of traction. They've recently got FDA approval for their Baha bone conduction device over in the United States. And if the Aussie dollar does continue to fall or does come back towards 70 cents, then Cochlear will be a major beneficiary of that. So it's a high-quality business. It's one of the Australian true success stories. So it's a feel-good story as well, and it's been helping a lot of people for a very long time, and they've been on the cutting edge of innovation, and they continue to innovate. There was a lot of fears as well a few years ago about imitation products coming out of China and competitors such as that, but what's been proven is it's all about quality. In the end of the day, you want to go with a quality business that has a quality product, and Cochlear ticks all those boxes.
Okay, so liking Cochlear here at the $100 mark. We're going to finish on an email here from Franco Di Lorenzo, who asks, which fund managers do you think have the most potential growth? Henderson Group, HGG, Magellan Financial Group, MFG, and Platinum Asset Management. Now, interestingly, all three of these fund managers are down 18 to 20% in the year to date, so just in 2016. However, over the last month, we have seen a bit of a rally of about 6 to 10%. So, Michael, would you be looking at fund managers at this point in time? And if you had to choose one, which one?
Yeah, look, we like the diversified financials. Obviously, you got hit very, very hard in the early stages of the year with the broader market sentiment and the broader market sell-off. We've been heavily invested in Magellan for a very long time and done very well out of it. We've been heavily invested in Henderson Group as well. Our preferred pick is Magellan Financial in terms of their growth profile. They've managed to grow their funds under management from about $25 billion to over sort of $38 billion, I think it is now, in a very short space of time. They've actually overtaken Platinum Asset Management in that very short space of time. So as these companies start growing their funds under management, their costs tend to be quite fixed, so it starts to flow through to their profits because they charge admin fees, management fees, those sorts of things. So as their funds under management go up, their management fees and admin fees start to go up as well, and that's reflected in their earnings, and eventually the share price follows. Magellan and Henderson, they invest overseas markets as well, not just domestic markets. And in the last sort of 5 years or so, the Australian market's been a continual perennial underperformer, if you like. So they've been not only earning high returns in overseas markets, but they've been converting those profits back into Australian dollars, with so an Aussie dollar that's been falling. So it's a business that we tend to like. Henderson's also a high-quality operation. And if you think about it, with more money going into superannuation, there's a bigger pool of funds out there that needs someone to manage it. These sorts of companies are the ones that are going to benefit long-term from that dynamic.
Okay, so liking the fund managers here. I mean, Henderson's based over in Europe, Magellan Financial Group, strong focus on North America, and Platinum, as you mentioned, domestic focus. Which of the three would you be picking?
Magellan's our preferred pick, but I will caution they are very volatile, and as we can see, they can sell off very quickly. So it's all about getting your entry price right. So anywhere around the sort of $20, $21 for Magellan, I think, is a very good entry point. But I wouldn't get too overexposed to it because they are quite risky and quite volatile.
Okay, and Nick, what do you think of
that? Yeah, look, I'd agree. From a relative strength basis on those three, Magellan certainly is the one that stands out. It's come back to good support around this $20 area here at the moment. 18 to 20 is a support zone, so if you like them fundamentally, that's your zone to buy them in. And as I said, on a rate of change and a relative strength basis, Magellan's the one that stands out to me.
Okay, so if you like it on a fundamental basis, that's where you'd be getting in. What about on a technical basis? How are the charts looking for these?
Well, again, there's two ways to trade the technicals. You know, you buy on the support as it pulls back, or you buy on the breakout. Historically, I've always bought on the breakout, jump on the train when it's already moving, rather than jump on the train, wait for it to turn around and then start moving. So in the current climate, the latter is the way to go, because we're pulling back to those support levels. So usually if it's good fundamentals, then you can mix the technicals on the support and buy that weakness.
Okay, so looking for that pullback to the support levels and getting in.
Yep, $18 to $20.
$18 to $20 for Magellan Financial Group. And it looks like both our panellists agreeing that that would be their pick out of those three. And that's all we have time for today. Thanks so much to our guests tonight, Michael Wayne from COSEC and also Nick Raj from The Chartist, and to you, our viewers, for all your calls and your emails. Thank you. Until next week, I'm Julia Lee from Bell Direct. Have a fantastic night.
The information featured in this program is general in nature and therefore should not be relied upon. Guests appearing on the program may have commercial arrangements with some of the companies mentioned. Before making any investment, insurance, or financial planning decisions, you should consult a licensed professional who can advise whether your decision is appropriate for you.